The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
What can I say except you're welcome for the tides, the sun, the sky? Just an ordinary demi-guy. Hey, what has two thumbs and pulled up the sky? When you were waddling yay high, this guy. When the nights got cold, who stole you fire from down below? Look at him, yo. Oh, also I lassoed the sun. You're welcome to stretch your days and bring you fun. Also I harnessed the breeze. You're welcome to fill your sails and shake your trees. So what can I say except you're welcome for the islands I pulled from the sea? There's no need to pray, it's okay, you're welcome. Ha! I guess it's just my way of being me. You're welcome.
What can I say except you're welcome, right? But really, you are welcome. I mean, and I know this music was performed in irony that Maui, that's the big guy who was singing, is saying you're welcome to Moana, who is the name title character of the movie, if you haven't seen it. He's saying you're welcome without being thanked, right? He's saying she wasn't really thanking him. And he's like, you're welcome, I got that. He's enlisting to her needs, he's enlisting to her desires. He's being selfish and he's expressing a complete lack of humility by responding to an unspoken thank you, right? Maui is taking credit for all sorts of things, some helpful, some not, and assuming that all of humankind is thankful to him. His language is empty, though, uncaring and thoughtless, which is sometimes how the other meaning of you're welcome gets used, right? I mean, I can stand up in here and say that everyone is welcome, and everyone is welcome to this gathering, but saying it and living it are two very different things. What if I am welcome, then why don't I feel like I belong? Why do I feel judged or unwelcome even when I'm being told that this is a place I can be myself? So that, my dear friends, is the topic we are going to explore today and the reality we're going to delve into. I'm Reverend Andrew Weber, and I welcome you here to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. Unitarian Universalism is a religion with radical welcome, radical acceptance at its core. There's no test of belief, there's no test of unbelief as you enter this space. What we ask of each person instead is the very simple and the very difficult task of being true to yourselves and allowing those around you to be true to themselves, right? Our faith takes courage, it takes vulnerability, it takes humility, it takes care for yourself and for others. In this spirit of welcome and loving accountability, we gather to celebrate, to be comforted, to be challenged, to worship. And we begin our sacred time together by lighting the chalice, the symbol of Unitarian Universalism. I've asked representatives from the Social Action Committee to come forward to light our chalice. You can come on up. And if you want to make the world a better place, if you want to put more love, more care into the world, into the community, just look towards this group of people. And there are many more on the Social Action Committee. They put our faith into action in a myriad of ways, with events from fundraising to advocacy, drag bingo coming up, pumpkin carving, right? I mean, like, hold on, what did he just say, drag bingo? Yes. We're doing a lot of cool things. Do you have anything, any other comments you want to be like, yes, don't forget about? Worthwhile thrift. On the 27th, next Saturday.
We have more slots. We have more slots. in the afternoon, then I think the morning might be filled. But check with that woman there.
Check with Francesca.
Hello, Francesca. Good morning.
Yes, I put you on the spot. Thank you. Our chalice lighting words this morning are responsive. So I'm going to start in the first voice. And if you could please respond with the bold type. And if you need to rise or move forward to see the text, please feel free. Belonging is the warmth of a hand held out. Belonging is not agreement, but the invitation to the table. Belonging is the story that changes because you arrived. Belonging is the lilt in the song sung together. Belonging is a promise, not that you must become us, but that you already are. Amen. Each morning we light a second flame, a second beacon of hope, a second challenge for us, for peace in the world and peace in our hearts. May peace be with us. Thank you very much. Our gathering hymn today, actually today, it's almost always, we have our hymnals in the back. So if you want to hold on to something, I like reading music, I like holding on to something. You can get a hymnal. If you don't want to, you don't have to, because we have the lyrics either in a video or on the screen. Today, we are actually going to use both hymnals. Enter into this as you wish. It's an invitation. Our first song is 188, Come, Come, Whoever You Are. I have to make sure I'm correct. Come, Come, Whoever You Are, 188, that's in the gray hymnal. So please rise in body or in spirit for our gathering hymn. Surprise, and thank you for engaging with that. We are going to have a children's story, but not just for children. This is for everyone. I've asked KDDs to come forward and share that story with us. If you want to come forward to see the pictures on a small screen or a big screen, please do so.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm reading The Invisible Boy by Trudy Ludwig. Thank you. Can you see Brian, the invisible boy? Even Mrs. Carlotti has trouble noticing him in her classroom. She's too busy dealing with Nathan and Sophie. Nathan has problems with what Mrs. Carlotti calls volume control. He uses his outside voice inside too much. Sophie whines and complains when she doesn't get her way. Nathan and Sophie take up a lot of space. Brian doesn't. When the bell rings for recess, Micah and JT take turns choosing kids for their kickball teams. The best players get picked first, then the best friends of the best players, then the friends of the best friends. Only Brian is left, still waiting and hoping. JT glances in Brian's direction and just as quickly looks away. "We've got enough players for each team," he tells the others. "Let's play ball." In the cafeteria, Madison and her friend talk about her birthday party. "The rope swing over the pool was awesome," says JT. "Yeah, so was the water slide," adds Fiona. That was the best pool party ever. "I'm so glad you guys had fun," says Madison. "Everybody did except Brian. He wasn't invited." At choosing time, while the other kids play board games and read, Brian sits at his table doing what he loves to do best. He draws fire-breathing dragons scaling tall buildings. Space aliens locked in intergalactic battles, and superheroes with the power to make friends wherever they go. On Monday morning, Mrs. Carlotti introduces Justin, a new student, to the class. Brian smiles shyly at him. Some of the other kids sneak looks at Justin, trying to figure out if he's cool enough to be their friend. They haven't quite made up their minds yet. At lunch, Madison and JT watch Justin eat with chopsticks. "What's that?" asks Madison as she points to Justin's food. "It's bulgogi." "Bul what?" "Bulgogi is Korean barbecue beef. My grandma made it for me. It's really good. Do you want to try some?" "There's no way I'm eating bulgogi." And the kids laugh, all of them, that is, except Brian. He sits there wondering which is worse, being laughed at or feeling invisible. The next day, when Justin goes to his cubby to put away his backpack, he notices a piece of paper with his name on it. "Justin, I thought the bulgogi looked good. Brian." And there's a picture that says, "Yum." At morning recess, Brian finds a piece of chalk on the ground and starts drawing away. They say, "You're Brian, right?" "Yep, thanks for the note." "Hey, Justin," Emilio calls out from the tetherball court. "You're up next." "Sorry, I gotta go," says Justin. "By the way, that's a really cool drawing," he adds before taking off. Back in class, Mrs. Carlotti asks the kids to team up in twos or threes for a special project. The kids scurry around the room to pair off. Brian heads towards Justin. "I'm already with Justin," says Emilio. "Find someone else." Brian looks at the floor, wishing he could draw a hole right there to swallow him up. "Mrs. Carlotti said we can have up to three people in our group. We're only two. Come on, Emilio, let him work with us." "Okay, I guess." Mrs. Carlotti gives the class directions for the project. "Your assignment is to work together to write a story about what you see in the photograph. Use your imagination and have fun." "Whoa, cool," says Emilio. "What kind of people do you think would live in houses like that?" "I don't know, but I bet Brian could draw them to go with our story," says Justin. Brian smiles as he takes out his lucky pen. There they are, drawing together in their group. Their story is called The Crooked Story We Made Up on the Spot. That's the name of their story. Looks pretty good. It's lunchtime again, Brian's least favorite part of the day. Another 20 long minutes of kids talking and laughing with everyone else but him. "Brian," he hears someone shout, "Hey, Brian, over here." Brian turns and sees Justin waving him over. Emilio nods at Brian as he makes room for him at the table. Look, Justin's offering Brian a cookie and he says, "Thanks." Maybe, just maybe, Brian's not so invisible after all. That's a good one. I think that's the end. Yep. That is the end.
Who here has ever felt invisible? I know I have. You're gonna have to give me a moment. This is what happens when, just went black. It's okay. I got this. Breathe. Yeah, but really, sometimes we just feel like we're not being seen. Like we're not visible. And you saw in the story with Brian. I mean, there are communities which I have been part of. There are communities which I've tried to be part of, where my presence felt like it was completely overlooked. Right? Visiting a new church, attending school, at a community pool, these are examples in my life, at my workplace, going out with friends. I mean, the examples I can think of usually involve groups of people who seem like they belong. Maybe people who have been part of that community for a long time. Maybe people who know each other from somewhere else. And they all have these inside jokes and the jargon and the language and the way of being with each other that I don't quite get, right? And it happens especially in places we're new to. But it can happen in places that we're not new to. It can happen elsewhere. It's that feeling of not being seen, maybe not fitting in, right? They have their jokes, their language, it's unfamiliar, the ways of acting and interacting. And they have this intimacy which a newcomer just doesn't have, right? Now, when I contemplate Brian's predicament in the story, or when I think about my own experiences, it comes to me to be the sense of belonging, the sense of being seen, not just with eyes of being seen, but like being seen in the proverbial sense. It's about being perceived as a human being. It's about belonging. It's about being recognized as a human being, about as an individual with my own needs, my own experiences, my own desires, my own wants. And belonging to a group means that we are noticed, that we are acknowledged. So when you think about where you might have felt invisible, take a moment and do the opposite. Think about where you have felt like you really belong. A group or community which accepted you for who you are. Where you're noticed, where you're given space, a place where you have connections with other people. Why don't you shout out? Either one, a place where you felt invisible or a place where you really felt connected. Give me some ideas here.
In a small group.
You felt connected in a small group. Small group ministry, yeah.
School.
In school. In a classroom. Was that connected or invisible?
Connected.
Invisible. Interesting. A very similar place, two different feelings, yeah.
Here.
Connected and seen and welcome here. Yeah. Yeah. If we look at the classic Maslow's hierarchy of needs, who remembers this from like, yeah. Do they still teach this? Okay, they do. Okay, this is still a thing. This is, it's some places, I guess, they still teach this. Yeah. It's a commonly held structure of what humans require to survive, right? And we can see love and belonging is in the middle, above the sort of physical needs of like, I need to be able to breathe and to eat and drink and have shelter. And then the safety of I need security. This one also has employment, health, property. And then there's the loving, the sense of belonging, which comes maybe before self-esteem and self-actualization. And of course, with any model like this, with any gross generalization, you can debate against this. This doesn't hold true for every person, right? The theory is debatable. But even still, there's a whole slew of data through peer-reviewed journal articles, and frankly, from your and my personal experiences, that having a sense of belonging, feeling like you belong somewhere is important. I mean, it feels sort of like I'm going to a restaurant and I'm saying like, hey guys, it's really important to eat, right? Because why do we come to church? I mean, one of the main reasons of coming to a community like this is to feel like you're part of a community. Like that's one of our reasons. That's one of the reasons we're here, right? We need to belong to a family, to a community, to something. I mean, that sense of connection is so important. And we know that, right? I mean, that's why religion exists. For community, for connections, for potlucks, which is arguably connections, and food. To be with people who agree with us. To be with people who challenge us, who maybe don't agree with us. To be with people who hold us lovingly accountable. And like, is that really what you meant to say, Andrew? Gosh. Yeah, we didn't come to a religious institution because we want to be solitary and alone. I mean, if you did, that's not what we do here. We come together in community. That's why we're here. Among other things, our sense of belonging. We're specifically here because of our need for connection. So part of that need for connection, that desire to belong, is promoting that to others, right? Unitarian Universalism is a religion based on radical hospitality. I've said this before. It's radical hospitality. It means that we are always opening our proverbial and our physical doors to the next person, welcoming in people who need us, welcoming in people whom we need. So what does it look like? No, what does it feel like? What does it feel like to create or sustain a culture of welcome, to create a community of belonging? I mean, it's easy to say that, right? It's easy to say all are welcome, all belong. But it isn't always easy to create or sustain that sense of openness, that sense of welcome. Now I'm going to shift a little. In college, this is pertinent. In college, I studied architecture. Maybe some of you knew that. And architecture, I didn't know that, yeah. You're like, oh, wow, I didn't know that about Andrew. Yeah, architecture is the study of buildings, yes, but it's also the study of any built environment, right? All built environment and how people interact with that built environment. I mean, some of the biggest architectural blunders come from people who are like, well, I'm going to build this building or this space and not think about how people are going to interact with it. So my coursework about the built environment, my experiences, I've done some construction too, my experiences in construction and actually building things gives me a lens through which I view the world sometimes. And with so much of religion, I really like tangible examples. I'm like, yeah, that's your belief. Okay, so like, what does that mean for your daily life? What does that mean when you go outside these doors? What does that mean for when you're sitting here, right? And my faith tells me to create a culture of connection and belonging. That's what my faith says. It's like, we work toward belonging, reaching out, accepting others. Okay, so what does that mean? So yesterday, I used my architectural lens, and I went out through my community and took a lot of pictures, and I looked for examples of belonging, for examples of welcome, examples of acceptance, and examples of rejection, and examples of unwelcome. So let's start with biking. Who here has biked or likes to bike or bikes around? Yeah, there we got a couple. I really enjoy biking. Some days. Some days it works, some days not. I really enjoy biking. Well, I drove and walked around town, and this is Newark, Delaware. So for those of you who know Newark, you'll recognize maybe some of these spots. If you don't, you can go around your neighborhood. I'm sure that if you went out in Collegeville and Trapp, Harleysville, and wherever you are, you could see some of these similar or same examples. You could find similar things. So here's Newark, Delaware. It's pronounced Newark, not Newark. That's New Jersey. We're Newark. This is Newark, okay? And we're a certified bicycle-friendly community since 2010. In quotes, someone said, since 2010, no. But we're a certified bicycle community. I didn't know who did the certification, so I looked it up. It's the League of American Bicyclists. Okay, there are certain criteria which one has to meet, and that looks promising, great. So I'm welcome as a cyclist. Well, here are some more examples, right? We have, oh, that's really nice. That's a divided lane apart from traffic. Here we have a sign for different routes around Newark. And there's a multi-use path with a map. Okay, this is really positive. This is looking good. I feel welcome as a cyclist. But, you know, let's go a little bit more. Let's continue exploring. Oh, no, we have more positive examples. Hey, look at this. This is even better. Bike route. Push button for green light for bicyclists specifically, right? These are called sharing arrows on the road. They're supposed to make people more aware of bicyclists who are sharing their lane. And then they have the sign that says, bicyclists may use full lane, which does not make it happen, but is a reminder to cyclists and for cars. And look at this, covered parking, a pump, and tools attached to that. Okay, this is really nice. Bless you. This is looking really good, right? I am welcome as a biker. This is what I'm seeing. Let's continue exploring. So if I pan back from the picture that has all the routes, look at this intersection. Oh my goodness, yeah, they're bike routes, but these are two four-lane highway, divided highways. I mean, there's a sign that says divided highway. Okay, all right, so there's a bike route there. Well, that looks a little scary. Oh, here, watch out for the bikes. There's a little bike sign, but the speed limit's 50. I mean, I'm not biking 50 miles an hour. That is a big difference between your cycling and your cars. That, to me, both of these look very dangerous. So am I welcome? Oh my gosh. And then the next one, we can see, okay, what is happening here? This is just confusing. To me, as a cyclist, okay, the green goes one way and the other way. Here, there's a double yellow line, only cyclists on the one side and cars on the other. And this one, actually, it's hard to see in the picture. I'll point out what's happening. There's a bike lane coming toward us. There's one going away from us, and it ends right there. So what are you supposed to do? There's a share row up here. What do you do? It just ends. The bike lane, it just stops in the middle of the road. Okay, so mixed messages about cycling here, right? I mean, and then we have one more. Here's personal action. So it's all, some of it's systemic. Some of it's how the world is built. Some of it's how signage is done. Some of it is how people use it. I was walking by, and I was like, you know what? This always happens. I wonder if it's going to happen right now. Boom. This is the same spot taken, 30 seconds apart? There's a bike lane. Look at that nice little bike lane. Oh, there's someone parked in it. It happens all the time. And what are you going to do? Well, they could pull over. There's a driveway right after this. Or they could stop right there and block the bike lane. Okay, great, thanks. You can leave it right here for a little bit. So I can hear, right, we get it. I mean, we get it, right? As a cyclist, I can hear both the words that biking is welcome, that we're a bicycle-friendly community since 2010, right? And I can experience the reality that there are places where I might not be completely welcome. Or there are places that I can belong, but only if I act or participate in a certain way. That's all. Excuse me. As long as I'm not an inconvenience for others, right? Maybe this isn't a community for me. Maybe this wasn't built with cyclists in mind. And it isn't just about cycling, right? If you're like, well, that's, you know, you're biking, you know, change the laws and change the rules. No, it's not just about cycling. This can be generalized, right? I love built environment examples. I mean, if you ever go like driving or walking around with me, it can get a little much. You're like, oh my gosh, look at how this is made. And look at what's happening here. And like, they really used their beliefs when they were thinking about where they put the sign. Like, what are you talking about? Look at it. We go further here because it's so literally tangible, easy to represent, easy to document. Here, let's look instead for mobility and accessibility, right? If you don't use a walker or a scooter or a cane or something like that, take a moment and think about what that would be like, right? Take a moment to think about what that would be like. And if you do use a scooter or walker or wheelchair or cane, you know the signs, the signals, the clues about where and how you are welcome or not. This is, again, just around Newark. This didn't take me very long. This is a sidewalk. That's a really big bump. It's hard to show. That's like 3 or 4 inches. Like, how are you going to get over that? This one, there's no space. Maybe something has grown or died on the sidewalk. You're going to go into the road here? I've talked about the post office before. I've mentioned this in one of my services, that this was grandparented in, that they didn't have to change. There's no accessible entrance to the post office on the main street in Newark. There's another post office nearby you'd have to drive to, but you cannot get in that without going up the steps. Excuse me. Here's one more. That this is a curb knockout right here. It's filled with garbage cans. You're not going to get up on that curb because it's filled with garbage cans. This you might not be able to see. Van accessible parking is right here. The blue hashed out space has dumpsters in it. You can't access a van that's parked there. And these are businesses that have used that space for their own utilization. What does that tell the person who has a van that needs to park there? You're not as important as the trash. I mean, like, literally, the trash is more important than you getting on the sidewalk or you parking your van. Right? I mean, that's That's the context of the welcome being overshadowed and dominated by the reality of being unwelcome. And we can keep on going. Let's look again at that very welcoming path. Remember, I had this very welcoming path. I was like, oh, yeah, of course. That's so welcoming to cyclists. They have the covered parking. There's a little tool thing that's like attached there. What's that sign in the middle say? Can you read that? No loitering. There used to be benches under this. No loitering. Oh, not so welcoming for those who are unhoused, is it? The cyclists are fine. If you're going to come and bike along the path, yeah. But if you need a place to stay out of the weather or overnight, no, you're not welcome here. How many of you have seen, this is a really bad picture, but there's a park bench, and there's an armrest here, an armrest here, an armrest in the center. How many of you have seen benches like that? Yeah, it's so you can rest your arms on it, right, in the park? No. It's so you cannot sleep there, right? And this is my mind as I walk around town, and I look at it like, oh, wow, that's interesting. For me, this is theology right here. This is saying, you are not welcome. You are not welcome. Some people are. Some people are welcome. Not others, right? I mean, the sign saying you are not welcome here is loud and clear for anyone who wants a place to lie down, who wants a place to rest. I mean, this is, you can just leave it right there for a little bit. It continues. Actually, what is the next slide? I forget what the next slide is. Yeah, leave it right there. That's great. Thanks, Mike. It continues. I mean, there's so much more, right? I want to bring it closer in because we're not, I mean, unless we're doing something I don't know about, we're not creating bike paths and park benches here. That's not what we do, but we are about creating community. So I'm going to look at our community of faith, our community of fellowship, and how do we get from having a sign that looks like this, from saying like Maui, you're welcome, to saying it, have a sign, I belong, you belong, we all belong, right? Yeah, we all belong here. How do we get from having a sign to feeling it here? Not just for us, but for other people too. Because I can tell you for certainty that not everyone who hears the words that they are welcome here actually feel as if they belong here. I can tell you for certainty, right? I can reiterate that. We have told people that they belong, that they are welcome here, and they haven't felt welcome. They haven't felt that they belong. I'm hesitant to bring up specific examples because sometimes we get focused on that one example and we might get hung up on those specifics. But even with that warning, we need to see some examples. So hear me out. I talked about leaving the doors open, proverbially and literally, but we lock our doors when the service starts. That makes some people feel very welcome because we know we're in a safe space for us, for our children. Locking your doors when the service starts makes other people feel unwelcome because they come late and they can't get in. Right? Making political or religious jokes can help us feel welcome because we know we are in a community of like-minded people. Making political or religious jokes tells those at the brunt of the joke that they are not going to be listened to or taken seriously. Having a men's and women's bathroom is how bathrooms are traditionally done and helps people feel welcome and comfortable knowing they have a safe and private place to use the bathroom. Having a men's and women's bathroom makes it clear we don't have a space for people for whom choosing one gendered space over another can be troublesome or difficult. Right? In national Unitarian Universalist gatherings, I've mentioned this before, and some of you have seen this. Usually, when a speaker gets up, they introduce themselves with their name, a physical description, and the pronouns they prefer to be referred to. We don't generally do that here. Some people find that way of introducing welcoming. They find, oh, this is a safe space where I can be who I am. And others find an introduction like that jarring, confusing, or off-putting. Right? I could keep going. I could keep going with these. I mean, this is part of my ministry, is to challenge and comfort. I can keep pushing here. Right? How do we create and sustain a sense of belonging to our founding members who are less able to drive? Where is our radical hospitality to people who don't vote like we do? Do we use gendered language that excludes? In our hymns, we sometimes sing about standing for a cause. And just this morning, I am sort of stepping back and looking and seeing that I am using a lot of visual descriptions of being seen. Is this ableist language of standing for a cause or being seen? Yeah. These are metaphors. We all know they're metaphors. But hearing language which doesn't include you sends a message that you aren't part of the conversation, that you might not belong. We are a, quote, welcoming congregation, right, with a sign saying that all gender identities, all sexual orientations are welcome. Does that feeling come across, or is it just a sign? Right? There's very little racial and religious background diversity in our community. And frankly, that's not just our community, that's most religions. There's a saying that like the most segregated hour in the week is like Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. Right? Is that a problem? I mean, I can ask many, many more questions, but the crux of it remains the same. What do we do? Our goal of Unitarianism, Unitarian Universalism, one goal of Unitarian Universalism, one goal of this beloved community is to create that sense of belonging, right? To have a safe and sacred space where people can come together. We've already made the step ourselves to find a space we can belong. We've all come here this morning. We've all found a space for us. A space where we are welcome beyond mere words. I mean, right, we're all here. The charge then is, how do we make that same sense of belonging for those who are not here yet? What are the ways in which we can continue to be welcoming community of belonging? Our task is not extremely difficult. Actually, let's go. I think there's one more here about belonging. And what this might mean. Okay, here's the sort of difficulty, is that belonging could do all of the, it could mean all of these things, right? You're invited, you're welcome, you're known, you're accepted, involved, supported, heard, befriended, needed, and present. We could unpack each one of those words. I'm not going to, though. And the task is not extremely difficult. It's fairly simple, right? And fairly commonsensical. That's not a word, but that's what it is. It takes common sense. And it's fairly simple, but with so much in religion, simple does not mean easy. Just like I said this morning, it's simple, it might not be easy, right? Cultivating belonging probably means that I need to step out of my set ways, out of my comfort a little bit. I might have to do something unfamiliar, uncomfortable. I may have to make way for a bicyclist. I may have to ensure that there's a ramp up to the dais here. I mean, there's no way someone can get up here without stepping, right? This isn't a new message for you, from me. It's slightly different packaging, right? Unitarian Universalism holds that you are worthy of love. You are worthy of love, each and every one of you. You belong here. You are welcome. And you know what comes next? So is the person next to you. So is the person who hasn't walked in the doors yet, who hasn't changed our lives yet. That person also is beloved and welcome and worthy of love. Right? There's someone driving past right now. Right now, that right there, that car that just went past. They could benefit from our community, and we could benefit from them coming here. So let's get to the sort of nuts and bolts of belonging as I see it. The work of belonging starts with being aware and noticing. One more slide here. Being aware and noticing. This is the taking note of places, of messages that are being sent or perceived as observing, explicitly, implicitly. That was me sort of walking around town. That's me looking at, you know, we do this. Who feels excluded by this language or by this framework or by this way that we do things, this tradition? And then the second step is to listen. Listen to other people, listen to their experiences, listening not just to hear them, but to trust their experiences, to trust their truth, right? I may see a locked door as welcoming. Listening means I am opening to hearing the truth that a locked door can also be not welcoming, right? Listening means we can try to understand the sense of belonging which another feels or doesn't feel without judgment, without persuasion. It's like, no, it actually is, but no, it's just listening, hearing that truth. That might be the hardest step, to actually and truly pay attention to someone else's experiences of belonging, of unwelcomeness. And then the third step is to actually do something, is to change, to take those observations, to take those gleanings from listening, and then to make positive change in the community, in our community, in the wider community, right? To make this a more beloved space, to help create a world where more people belong. And I see these three steps, listening, observing, changing, they're not linear and they don't have to be done this way. I didn't find a better picture than the arrows in a circle. It wasn't like arrows that go all over the place, because your observing will change the more you listen to someone. I hope that as you leave here, as you go out in your communities, you're more aware and you're like, oh my gosh, there's no curb cut out here. Or wow, when I shovel snow, I really should do more than like a 10-inch stripe. I don't know, I'm not judging any of you. I don't know how you shovel your snow, but maybe you're thinking like, oh my gosh, who else interacts with this space? Who else interacts with it, and how am I interacting with it differently? Or how do I notice what is happening here for those with disabilities, for the cyclists, right? And you can keep going. And when we change, we might make a mistake. Oh my gosh, yeah, we'll make mistakes. We will absolutely make mistakes. And then we need to listen again. And when we're open to other people, when we're open to their realities, we may notice things differently. I hear my coworkers' experience of women being interrupted more than men. It's not my experience, but I've heard people say that, and so now I might look for that more. I might look for like, oh my gosh, are women interrupted more than men? And I notice it, and then I change, and I step up and use my privilege and say, hold on a second, can you please let her finish? As an example, right? Maybe my friend at church tells me their feeling of feeling ostracized for their political beliefs. That's something I might start to notice then, to pick up on, to speak up to. We observe, we listen, we change. And my advice is for me, it's for you, it's for our house of fellowship, it's for faith, it's for your workplaces, it's for your communities, right? Put your Unitarian Universalist values on a lens through which to see the world. And in saying lens, I mean, this is me introspecting, like, should I not be using lens? What sort of language can I use to make sure that I don't ostracize people? What do you observe? What do you hear? What can you change? Go around the communities you are part of and see if you can cultivate a sense of belonging and that sense of welcome, right? If you want to nurture belonging, if we want to get past just saying, you're welcome, right? Then we have to make that feeling be felt, frankly. And then we can get a little bit uncomfortable maybe go out of our desires, maybe go out of our way. Oh, it's comfortable to do this. I just park here because that's where I park, because I can drop someone off. It's like, yeah, but there's a bike lane, or you're blocking the handicap access, or oh my gosh, I should really pay attention to that. Maybe go out of your way and see the world from a different point of view. That's what our faith requires of us. So as oftentimes, the message is twofold. You belong here, you belong in the world. I can't say that one enough. You belong. You are worthy of love. You belong. And we help to create that sense of belonging, that welcome for you, for the person next to you, for the person who has not yet entered your life, who has not yet changed your life. We cultivate belonging through observation, listening, and change. You belong, so do they. Show those truths to the world. Amen. and amen. We are now going to sing from the Teal Hymnal. It's not a round, but it is a repetitive style song, as many of the songs in here are. If you want to follow along with the hymnal, it's 1053. The lyrics will be right here. We're going through five times. You can rise in body or in spirit.
How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul. How could anyone ever tell you you were anything less than beautiful? How could anyone ever tell you you were less than whole? How could anyone fail to notice that your loving is a miracle? How deeply you're connected to my soul.
We are connected, and we like to keep those connections strong, build new ones when necessary. And that is why we give part of our service each Sunday to sharing. This is a part of the service we call caring together. And caring and sharing are intimately connected. One feeds the other. So at this time, we do invite each and every one who wishes to share the highlights of their lives and the low times of their lives if they need to, share sorrows, joys, concerns of their personal life, what is closest to them. And those who are here in the sanctuary, many of you know, are welcome to come to the other microphone and remind us who you are. We may have forgotten a name. And for those who are at home, we'll have the opportunity to raise their hands to be also recognized to share with us. So, please, come share to build the sense of our all belonging together. Come. Forward. Let's conclude this period of sharing with hymn number 346. Come, share a song with me. Where today we are at the eve of a couple of turning points. And they're turning points that offer an opportunity for reflection, for self-examination, for evaluation. Tomorrow is the first day of autumn, so we have the turning point of the seasons, leaving summer behind, though it's been cool enough that maybe we did that a little while ago, and welcoming autumn. And with the turning of the season at this time, it's the equinox, a time when light and darkness are in balance. And that can invite us to consider the balance or the lack of balance in our own lives. Are our days full of work, of busyness, or is there time too for recreation, for relaxation, and for relationships? That's one of the turning points. Also, tomorrow evening is the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, of the Jewish New Year, of the period of reflection that Jews around the world enter to consider how they lived the last year and how they want to live going forward. One of the thoughts might be to consider whether you have ignored or slighted someone, perhaps even injured someone. Then it is time to ask for forgiveness. Or for others, it's a time to give forgiveness, to forgive. Whether to forget or not is another matter, but to forgive. Another reflection is whether there is an anger or a hurt or an unpleasant memory from that year past that you don't want to take forward into the new year. Write it on a slip of paper. Drop it into a stream, a brook, a river, flowing water. Watch it float away to help give you the start. And you don't have to do it physically. You can just think your way through it, taking that something that you want no longer to be part of your life and let it float away. I hope the days and weeks coming up give all of us a chance to reflect, to consider whether there are parts of our lives we wish to change, and to step forward and begin the change. And now I'd like to share some words from Richard S. Gilbert, whom I've referred to before here. Come into the circle of caring. Come into the community of gentleness, of justice, of love. Come and you shall be refreshed. Let the healing power of this people penetrate you. Let loving kindness and joy pass through you. And peace be the law of your heart. In this human circle, caring is a calling. All of us are called. So come into this circle of caring. Blessed be. Now, let's join together again in song. The Teal Hymnal once again, number 1064. Blue Boat Home. Familiar and loved.
Standing on these mountains and plains, far away from the rolling ocean, still my dry land heart can say, I've been sailing all my life now, never harbor or port have I known. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue. My sail and moon, my rudder, as I ply the starry sea, leaning over the edge in wonder, casting questions into the deep, drifting here with my ship's companions, all we kindred pilgrim souls, making our way by the lights of the heavens in our beautiful blue boat home. Give thanks to the waves upholding me. Hail the great winds urging me on. Greet the infinite sea before me. Sing the sky my sailor song. I was born upon the fathoms. Never harbor or port have I known. Wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue boat home. The wide universe is the ocean I travel, and the earth is my blue.
May you know that while your brokenness is compelling and real, it is only a fragment of your totality. It does not define you and need not limit you. May it and you find healing in community. May you know that I see God in you and pray that you manifest that divinity in many ways, small and large, and that even if you can't right now, that sanctity remains as resource and as strength. May you know that you are beautiful. May you know that you are good. May you know that you are loved. Amen, and blessed be.